Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. The Zionist regime's genocide against Palestinians in Gaza is 6.5 months old. It has taken the lives of at least 34,000 people, although that number is more likely to be 40,000 because of those still under the rubble. And at the same time, the regime has caused such destruction of human lives and infrastructure in Gaza, the Zionist entity has continued to wreak havoc in the region, and of course, not just during the last 6 months, but for decades. We're going to take a look at all of this on the Spotlight. I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Out of Dublin, Asad Abu Sharq, Palestinian academic and activist. And out of Manchester, Peter Ford, former British ambassador to Syria.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
But thank you both for being with us. I'd like to start it off with Assad. Now, the Israeli regime is the root of most of the instability in the region. Your thoughts on this statement?
Yes, of course. Israel is the mother of all evils in that part of the world because it was created as an apartheid state, settler, colonial state, to serve the interests of the West at the expense of the Palestinian people, to ethnic cleanse the Palestinian people, to implant European Zionist Jews in order to serve the interests of the West and to keep that part of the world unstable, not settled, and to launch, so that Israel can launch series of wars. Israel, ever since 1948, launched wars after wars aimed at ethnically cleansing the Palestinian people in order to bring and to pump in more Jews from Europe and to pump out more Palestinians from Palestine. Of course, Israel is being supported, as we said, and created and invented by the West, by Americans, by the British, by the French, by all Europe, not ever since 1948 and before 1917, Balfour Declaration, and even before that, when they started to send Zionists to Palestine in order to take the place of the Palestinians. So now Israel is committing now this time genocide with the support and psychological support, propaganda support, military support, economic support, political support, media support of the West. They wouldn't even accept to impose ceasefire, immediate ceasefire, lasting ceasefire, and they wouldn't ask Israel to withdraw. Although Israel, this time, this Nakba, I'm not talking about the first Nakba, this Nakba killed thousands and thousands of children, thousands and thousands of women and people, destroyed the infrastructure, destroyed mosques, destroyed schools, universities, churches, everything. They destroyed everything, and they declared that. They said, we are going to destroy, we are going to kill all the Palestinians. This is what they say. And then they said, we are going probably to drop an atomic bomb. There are no innocent people in Gaza.
Okay.
All the Gazans should leave. And this is, they are being supported by the West.
Okay, stay with me, Assad. Stay with me, Assad. Let me get our other guests in. involved in this conversation. Well, Peter, even during this genocide, in the middle of this genocide, the regime has regularly bombed Syria, causing death and destruction. I mean, what is it after in Syria? Why does it continually attack Syria?
Israel attacks Syria partly because it's a relatively easy and cost-free thing to do. The government of Syria is in no position to retaliate against the very powerful Israeli state backed by America. Syria is a country with a quarter of its territory occupied effectively by the United States, which, working through some local mercenaries, controls Syria's oil. So Israel is able to get away with murder, literally with murder, in Syria. At least it was until very recently, when it murdered the Iranian generals in Damascus, a new page was opened and a red line was crossed. It's one thing to attack the poor Syrian army, which can hardly defend itself. It's another thing to attack the embassy, the consulate of an important country with an important military like Iran. And Israel is now beginning to learn the hard way that you don't cross red lines with Iran. You must think very, very carefully before you take a risk of confrontation with Iran. And what's happening now is that the Israelis have come off second in the struggle with Iran, in the exchange of attacks on each other's territory. And Israel is now licking its wounds. I suspect this is why it has now returned to its easy target of Gaza, where again the Gazans are, like the Syrians, are in no position to inflict a major military defeat on Israel. This is the easy way for the Israelis to try to restore the pride that was lost this week in their confrontation with Iran.
Hmm. Well, Assad, we've also seen time and again the regime attacking Iraq, and last night was no different, although the Israeli regime has not admitted to carrying out the attack against their popular mobilization forces. It is reported that fighter jets took off from the Israeli entity, flew over Jordan to Iraq. And by the way, the PMF was created as a counterterrorism force to stop Daesh in the beginning, in the first place, during its terror campaign in Iraq. Your thoughts about the regime's goal in attacking the PMF?
You see, Israel has always been attacking its neighbors and using different methods of attack, whether it is military or security or underground and whatever. But Israel now, this time when they attacked, of course, Syria, they attacked before Iraq, they attacked Egypt before, and they attacked Lebanon, blah, blah, blah. But now, this time, I think when they crossed the lines against Iran, of course, they received a response, very, very, very strong response, which was televised, and everybody saw it, and I think it was celebrated by the Palestinian people and by the Arab peoples in the area. And this is why Israel, of course, couldn't do anything, although it is being supported by Western countries, and especially by the Americans. But also the Americans and Western countries do not want an all-out war in that area. They encourage Israel to retaliate, or to do some limited retaliation, but not to start an all-out war, because they know that if there is an all-out war, that Israel will be greatly affected. And not only Israel, their own interests. This is the most important thing for them, their own interest. But Israel remains an element of instability in that part of the world. And as long as, I'll tell you, as long as there is Israel in that part of the world and there is an occupation of Palestine, I think there can never ever, I repeat, never ever be peace or stability or security in that part of the world, unless all European Zionist Jews who were sent to occupy Palestine are taken back to their countries of origin in Europe.
Okay, well, Peter, the Zionist entity has also continuously now bombarding southern Lebanon, as the Lebanese resistance group Hezbollah has kept the pressure on the regime in order to occupy it on its northern front. Your thoughts about the continual tit-for-tat between the regime and Hezbollah, and how effective has Hezbollah's actions been?
Back in 2006, people will recall, there was a very serious war between Hezbollah and Israel, with exchanges of thousands, not hundreds, thousands of missiles and bombs on each side. And the result was a defeat for Israel. Israel was forced to withdraw its troops from southern Lebanon. It was forced to admit that it had been unable to defeat Hezbollah. And the result was 18 years of peace on that border. Israel had been deterred from attacking Lebanon by Hezbollah. That area, the border area, enjoyed 18 years of almost complete peace until the Israeli invasion of Gaza. This is what provoked the instability on that northern Israel border with Lebanon, because Hezbollah wanted to help the resistance forces in Gaza and therefore started to shell Israeli targets just across the border. And this led to exchanges of fire. In the end, about 100,000 Israelis living along that border have been forced to leave their homes entirely as a result of the Israeli attack on Gaza. Those Israelis are suffering a little bit, just a little bit, of what the people of Gaza are suffering.
Peter, let me just jump in here. So basically, what you're saying when you compare like 2006 and what happened and Hezbollah basically getting rid of the regime as far as attacking them, are you basically saying that you have to hit the regime with force to cause a deterrence? Otherwise, as we see in other places and especially what they're doing to the Palestinians in Gaza, they will do whatever they can to cause havoc and basically tyranny wherever they are.
Exactly. This is about deterrence. Hezbollah created deterrence for Lebanon against Israel. Iran, just in the past few days, has reinforced, I think, the power of Iranian deterrence against Israel attacking Iranian assets wherever they are. A very important thing that happened in the last few days is that senior Iranian speakers made clear that Iran would no longer tolerate the series of, not just one or two, but there must have been a dozen attacks on Iranian targets, including scientists in Iran itself, Iranian personnel helping defeat ISIS in Syria, Iranian personnel in Iraq likewise helping to defeat ISIS. That it was made clear to the Israelis this week that these attacks would no longer be tolerated and Iran was going to establish deterrence. Well, that is what has now happened. And with luck, this will actually make for more stability, at least on those fronts. But the weaker parties, the Palestinians of Gaza, the Palestinians of the West Bank, the Syrians, they do not have deterrence because they're not strong enough alone. And these areas will remain unstable.
Well, Assad, It is not just since the Holocaust in Gaza, but the Zionist regime has wreaked havoc in the region for decades, from terrorism, either directly or indirectly, to attempts at regime change. And they have done it all without any condemnation from their Western backers. How responsible are these Western regimes for Israeli crimes?
You see, human rights and democracy and, so-called values and the principles of justice, of humanity, of equality are a farce. The West is not serious. This white supremacist mentality, this European, whether it's European or American, downgrades others and consider them lesser people, and they do not care for them. Because they created, as I said, Israel at the expense of the Palestinian people, and they are supporting and financing and funding and sending weapons. And all the world now knows, all the world, even European people, they say that how Israel is butchering Palestinian children, men, women, destroying everything. And the West wouldn't even ask for a ceasefire, and they keep sending weapons, and they were, and they keep visiting that apartheid Israel, and providing it with all kind of help and support, moral and material and military, and they wouldn't. This shows how hypocritical the hypocrisy, the double standard policy of the West, and they are exposed after their own true colors. This is why there are huge demonstrations in the streets of most of Western Europeans, because even the European people are shocked of the brutal and savage and monstrous behavior of their own government and of how they treat other people. And I think democracy now proved to be false, human rights false. I think things are going to change in the whole world, and nobody is going to believe the West when they talk about justice, when they talk about human rights, when they talk about democracy, and things are changing. They know that it is the West who stole traitor regimes in the Arab world. In order to cooperate with the Zionist regime to kill and to conspire against the Palestinian people, not only against the Palestinian people, they conspired against Iran, against Syria, and against Iraq, against anybody, any country which resists Western hegemony and Western control of that part of the world. So I think the whole world is going to change from now on. But the resistance will continue, the Palestinian resistance will continue, and I think we will see change even in the Arab world, because the Arab peoples are disillusioned of the high treason of their regimes, saying that Gaza is being butchered in cold blood by the Zionists and by Europe and by Biden and by, you know, all these people, while the Arab regimes are doing nothing. They wouldn't even allow a bottle of water from crossing point from Rafah. They are all just spectators on this genocide against the Palestinian people.
Okay. Well, Peter, when Netanyahu was asked in an interview who are Israel's enemies, he said he could name three: Iran. What does that mean about the role Iran is playing in countering Israeli terrorism?
Well, Netanyahu, for once, spoke the truth. You know, even a broken watch tells the truth twice a day. And it is correct that Iran is the only country in the region which has the ability to stand up against Iran. All the Arab countries are weak compared with Iran. They don't have either the military capability or the determination or even the desire to resist Israel. Nevertheless, some Arab countries have been more guilty than others, and the participation of Jordan in recent events is perhaps going to, in the end, Jordan may pay a heavy price, because Jordan is one of these other weaker countries in the vicinity of Israel, and weak countries should not take risks. Iran is the only country which is able to bring into play not just its own military, but important allies such as Hezbollah and the Hashd al-Shaabi, which has just been attacked in Iraq, and other armed groups also present in Syria and Iraq. Therefore, Iran is able to respond to aggression on not just one, but several fronts. And this is an important part of Iran's deterrence. Now, this situation is complicated by the fact that the Americans have bases in Syria and Iraq. But it turns out that these bases are, in fact, elements of strength for Iran, because if Iran, God forbid, was attacked by America, Iran would come knocking on the door of those bases, and they could be eliminated relatively easily in what would be a disaster for the United States. So, ironically, the fact that the Americans have these bases close to Iran is an asset for Iran. They are hostages to Iran. And this was very noticeable just in the last week in the American reactions. The Americans were afraid of how the Israelis were behaving and likely to behave. And they were afraid largely because of their own military presence in the area, which could have been severely embarrassed. So, conclusion is that Iran makes the weather in the region. Iran and the United States together make the weather. Israel has to listen to the United States. Iran doesn't have to listen to anybody. So Netanyahu, for once, was not lying.
And on that note, I have to thank both of you for being with me on this spotlight. Assad Abu Shagh, Palestinian academic and activist out of Dublin. Peter Ford, former British ambassador to Syria out of Manchester. And thank you for being with us here on the spotlight once again. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing off with the crew right here in Tehran, and all the rest. Goodbye.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
Allahu Allah. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Madarsi with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll discuss some of the contents of Chapter Naml, the 27th chapter of the Holy Quran, as well as some of the commentary points of the verses. Brothers and sisters, let's listen to the 17th verse of Chapter Naml.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
وحشر لسليمان جنوده من الجن والإنس والطير فهم يوزعون.
And gathered for Solomon were his soldiers of the jinn and men and birds, and they were marching in rows.
So, as you listen to the verse, dear listeners, you understood that the verse says that there are some hosts of jinn and men who were gathered for Solomon. وَحُشِرَ لِسُلَيْمَانَ جُنُودُهُ مِنَ الْجِنِّ وَالْإِنسِ وَالطَّيْرِ فَهُمْ يُوزَعُونَ. And they were kept in order and ranks. Now, in different occasions, the Holy Quran has talked about jinn, and one of the surahs of the Quran is also named and called jinn. Here, in this very verse, it is referred to some of the qualities of those jinn. Jinn is a creature which has sensation and has been addressed by Allah, where the Holy Quran says, O assembly of jinn and mankind. So this is one part of the verse of the Holy Quran. Ya ma'ashar al-jinni wal-ins. Some of the jinn are believers, while some others of them are disbelievers. They are male and female, and naturally they have different kinds of desires. Now, some of them worked for Solomon as builders and divers, as the Holy Quran says, and the Satans, including every builder and diver. This is the verse of the Holy Quran. And it is understood from the verses of the current surah and those of another one that the government of Solomon had not an ordinary circumstance. It was formed by some extraordinary events and various miracles, some of which are mentioned in this surah, like Solomon's governing over jinn and birds, recognition of the talk of ants and speaking with hoopoe, and another part of it has been mentioned in the other verses of the Holy Quran. Now, the fact is that Allah showed His might in making appear His great government and the forces it possessed. And we know that from the viewpoint of a monotheist, these affairs are easy, they are simple, they are somehow untroubled for the Allah, the Almighty. By this verse, the Holy Quran says, And gathered together unto Solomon his hosts of jinn and men and birds. وَحُشِرَ لِسُلَيْمَانَ جُنُودُهُ مِنَ الْجِنِّ وَالْإِنسِ وَالطَّيْرِ
على مر الزمان تألقا وأضاء للدنيا طريقا.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
حفظ الكتاب بصدره فبدا وضيئا كالنجوم تألقا وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
وإلى السماء
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
So, dear listeners, as we understood, this power of the Almighty Allah, this might, is made manifest in the beginning of this very verse, because from the viewpoint of a monotheist, when you look at this verse monotheistically, these affairs are easily done and simply carried over, because the verse says, "And gathered together unto Solomon his hosts of jinn and men and birds." And the verse continues saying, "And they were kept in order and ranks." So the number of his forces was so large that in order to regulate the army, it was ordered that the primary rows of the forces should stop till when the last rows could move and reach the others. So that's why the verse says, "And they were kept in order and ranks." فَهُمْ يُوزَعُونَ. The Quranic word yuza'un is derived from the word waza', which is the sense of to restrain, to hold back. So when this word is used in respect to army, it means that the first part of the army should be stopped till the ending part of it joins, and they would not be divided in this regard. So, the Arabic word waza is also applied in the sense of avarice and the intensive interest, so that it hinders man from other affairs. So, that's why this word is also used in this meaning as well. So, altogether, it is understood from this application that the forces of Solomon were both abundant, and they also worked under a special order. So, فَهُمْ يُوزَعُونَ, the verse says. Also, the Quranic word حُشِرَ is derived from حَشْر, which means bringing out the crowd of army from the resting place and causing them to start toward the battlefield, mobilizing them and the like. So it is understood from both this meaning and the meaning used in the next verse that Solomon had led an army into a place, but it is not quite clear that which one is among Solomon's military expeditions. Taking the contents of the next verse in mind, which speaks about reaching Solomon to the land of the ants, some say that it had been a region near Taif, while some others believe that it had been land near Syria. We will, God willing, talk more about this very verse in the next episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.ir. Until the next program, take care.
Things always worked for me. Worry ends when faith begins.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Russia, Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
According to the Palestinian Ministry of Health, more than 70% of the fatalities of the brutal Israeli aggression against the Gaza Strip are children and women. Likewise, according to reports issued by the Euro-Mediterranean Center for Human Rights, women and children in Gaza are enduring displacement, death, pain, and suffering in a way that the human mind cannot bear. More than 80% are living in tents without the minimum basic needs to live, without water, without food, with a chilling cold. The current situation is pushing them to the limit, making it impossible to focus on anything but survival.
Today, innocent civilians are placed in inhumane conditions which do not possess the most basic requirements for human survival. When it comes to children and women, the suffering becomes more painful because women's needs are greater. Women today live in tents. There is no bathroom. There is no toilet. They cannot take care of themselves. They have to stand in long lines in front of men's bathrooms, and this means double suffering. Also, do not forget pregnant women or those who gave birth during the attack. We're talking about an aggression that affects all vital aspects.
Pregnant women and those who have given birth in the midst of war are one of the most affected groups. Similarly, the United Nations Population Fund estimated that since the beginning of the Israeli aggression on the Gaza Strip, approximately 60,000 women are pregnant, and of them, 5,500 would give birth soon, many of them by cesarean section. This means that terrible hospital sanitary conditions, as well as the food crisis, will endanger their lives and the lives of newborn babies.
Pregnant women are suffering from extreme cold, food shortages, and medicine shortages. We have noticed an increase in the rate of spontaneous abortions, an increase in the rate of premature births, and an increase in cases of small fetuses. Pregnant women leave the hospital about 10 hours after giving birth and go to the tents, where they have no means of living. Newborn babies are exposed to many diseases. We have observed that a large percentage of these women return to the hospital with their children who have caught a cold, and some have also died.
The lack of hygiene and high levels of malnutrition experienced in overcrowded refugee camps are a poisonous mixture. According to the World Food Program, there's a high risk of famine, and cases of dehydration and malnutrition are increasing rapidly. Many mothers say they only eat once a day to survive. However, there are children who have stopped talking or eating because of what they have seen and experienced. Others cry and scream with every loud sound they hear. Months of war have traumatized an entire generation of children.
You see the atmosphere. Making bread is suffering. To go to the bathroom, you have to wait in line. To get water and foods, you also have to wait in line. That is, our entire life is suffering. In the tent where I live, there are approximately 8 people and my daughter, her husband, and her daughter as well. That is 13 people in just 9 square meters. We have to make the bread here, you see, and if we don't find cardboard to light the fire, we can't bake the bread. We only have one bottle of water a day and food. If they give us help, we eat. And if they don't give us food, no, because the price of goods is multiplied by 10. The suffering we experience as children is that we have been forced out of our homes. Our houses were bombed when we were inside it. My friend, who was my cousin, has died. All my friends have died, and I have no one left. Our childhood has been stolen from us. I want to go back to my house. I want the war to end and return home so I can rest.
Gazans continue to call for Israel to fulfill its obligations under international humanitarian law, which begins with the protection of civilian lives. They assure that all they want is the end of this nightmare full of death and pain. Palestinian women have always been the symbol of the strong law of resistance. However, displacement, hunger, and lack of health care due to the Zionist war are disproportionately affecting women. They claim that even their dignity has been lost. And for that reason, they will never forget and they will take revenge for these violations and the misery they are in just because of the Zionist regime. Hoda Hejazi, Gaza, Palestine.
Chanting anti-Israel slogans and carrying placards with messages thanking the IRGC for conducting Operation True Promise. Thousands of Iranians marched down the streets in major cities across the country after the Friday prayers to voice their support for the armed forces and a recent punitive military operation carried out against Israel, dubbed Operation True Promise. The retaliatory attack was in response to Israel's deadly attack on the Iranian embassy in Syria on April the 1st, resulting in the martyrdom of top IRGC commander, Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Zahedi, and six other military officers. The punitive retaliatory attack involved a slew of drones and missiles targeting and causing damage to Israeli military bases.
There was a time when they could attack us and get away with it. But now the IRGC has proven that those days are over. I'm so proud of them.
We've been waiting for this moment for so long, ever since they assassinated Haj Qasem. I'm so grateful to our armed forces.
The IRGC really made all Iranians proud. We are so happy. That is why I'm here to thank them.
I was so happy on the night of the attack that I came out on the street to celebrate that the Israelis finally got what they have deserved after committing so many crimes.
The demonstrators also used the opportunity to denounce Israel's genocidal war in Gaza and its crimes against Palestinians.
We are here for the people of Gaza. I don't think any human being can watch what's happening and be indifferent.
Defending the oppressed is our duty. That is why I always take part in these demonstrations.
In cities all across Iran, people took part in mass demonstrations to show their support for the IRGC and Operation True Promise. Gisum Mishah Ahmadi, Tehran.
Instead of beating the drums of war, it is the delicate taps of instruments such as the dulcimer or the santur in Persian and the harmonious melodies of different tongues that should be wafting across borders. As Iran celebrates its National Culture Week in South Africa, officials and the public have visited exhibitions in the key cities of Johannesburg, Pretoria and Cape Town to learn more about the Persian heritage. The event was held at the Castle of Good Hope in Cape Town, which was a Dutch colonial fort and is now a museum.
Culture is a very powerful construct because it forces people to communicate, not only through language, because I can't speak the Iranian language, they can't speak Afrikaans, which is my mother tongue, but through our handiwork, through our art, through our crafts that we do, we can connect as human beings and exchange ideas, because culture is not devoid of power and of politics.
And this view is shared by South African officials and even within the Organization of Developing Economies, BRICS Plus, which Iran joined at the beginning of 2024.
But I'm looking forward to us coming out with a university of some sort. And that university is going to be a technology-driven university that has got culture imbued in it. Because we cannot just be driven by, you know, gadgets and technologies. We have to put our humanity within this technology. If we can do that, I believe that we can go very far as a people.
South Africa and Iran have extensive relations, and so through expanding this exchange of unique arts and crafts, they can effectively use the skills of their respective peoples to develop economic ties and, within the framework of BRICS Plus, shape a new world which breaks away from the current system. Culture is important now more than ever, as it fosters understanding and can develop closer relationships between different peoples. In a world overwhelmed with conflict, exhibitions such as these are important for peace. Hassan Siria, Cape Town.
It took the Turkish president more than 3 days to come up with a statement on Iran's retaliatory attack on Israel. Erdogan blamed Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu for trying to spread conflicts and create tensions in the region through provocations. He added that those who did not voice their rejection of Israel's aggression on Gaza for several months are today condemning Iran's response. İsrail'in
uluslararası hukuku. The main one responsible for the tension that gripped our hearts on the evening of April 13 is Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his bloody administration. Israel is trying to provoke a regional conflict, and its attack on Iran's embassy in Damascus was the last drop.
Turkish government was criticized by the opposition for its silent position from regional tension. Deputy chair of Republican People's Party Erhan Uzgel said he was astonished not to see a single reaction or statement by Erdogan's cabinet or his ministers after the attack.
Amid such an important development in our region and a military assault launched directly by another state targeting Israel for the first time since the October War in 1973, amid such an escalation and such great tension in the region, we're astonished to observe that not a single official, especially the minister fighting first, has made any comment on this issue.
Meanwhile, an opposition parliament member slammed the AK ruling party's double standard, saying they pray for the children of Gaza on one hand while selling the fuel that is used to bomb those children on the other.
Can you imagine this hypocrisy? On the one hand, they're praying for the children of Gaza, and on the other hand, selling fuel to Israeli jets. You say Al-Quds is your red line. You're sending terrorism to Quds. You have Gaza children in one hand and the green dollars on the other hand. Shame on you.
Turkey holds significant importance in the region, and every development has an impact on Turkey politically and economically. Therefore, as experts say, the only way Turkey's silence can be explained is by linking it to the economy. And it is also the reason why Ankara did not immediately cut trade ties with Israel, and it merely severed diplomatic relations. Many believe a country like Turkey and a leadership like the Justice and Development Party were expected to not only defend Iran, but also stand by its Muslim neighbor against Israel.
Turkey had been silent about this issue, but as of yesterday, support came from President Erdogan, blaming Israel and supporting Iran. This was very important and provided a clear and good response. True, Turkey has economic relations with Israel, but if Turkey wants to develop and enhance its relations with Eastern countries, such as Iran, Iraq, Azerbaijan, and even Syria, it can reach a good place regionally. While Turkey has economic relations with Israel, its relationship with Iran goes much further. Therefore, Turkey should definitely stand by Iran in this matter.
Many believe it is time for Turkey to choose where to stand, rather than trying to verbally support the resistance and continue to press ahead with its Western and Israeli collaborations. Erdogan's comments on Iran's retaliatory attacks came late, just like the decision to cut a trade with Israel was late. It seems Ankara is walking a very thin line in its ties with Iran amid fears of harming economic relations with the Israeli regime. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
After days of anticipation, Iran unleashed a barrage of missiles and drones against Israeli targets in the occupied territories. The legitimate response came after Israel attacked Iran's consulate in Damascus on April 1st, violating all international laws and conventions.
Iran's response comes within the international laws, specifically Article 51 of the United Nations Charter, which gives Iran the legitimate right to defend its national security. The Iranian attack on Israel has changed the geopolitical map in the region, and it was a strong warning to the evil regime.
The Iraqi people, as well as resistance leaders, hailed the Islamic Republic for the unprecedented response, dubbed Operation True Promise, which was within the inherent right of self-defense that entitles any country to protect its diplomatic institutions. Iran's retaliation came after the UN Security Council failed to condemn Israel's attack, which killed 7 members of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps.
The resistance and the people of Iraq surely stand by the Islamic Republic of Iran amid the failure of international community and the UN Security Council to condemn the Israeli attack on the Damascus consulate. Iran had all the rights to defend itself and respond with proper means and timing.
The significant operation clearly shows that Iran will not hesitate to take action against any threat to its citizens and institutions. Now, with its capabilities and military evolution, Iran has significantly changed the rules of battlefield in modern times.
Iran's retaliatory operation, which came after a long time of strategic patience in the face of Israeli's brutalities, shows that the Tel Aviv regime's days of hit and run are over. And Iran does not hesitate to exact a devastating revenge on its enemy, despite its all-out Western support. Muslim Salem, Baghdad.
Iran's retaliatory strikes on Israeli-occupied territories have drawn admiration and praise in Afghanistan from both the country's ruler, the Taliban, and the Afghan people. They said the reprisal strikes were completely legitimate, justifiable, and have expressed their support for Iran in the face of hostilities.
Long live and fingers crossed to the leader of Iran and to the brave nation and IRGC of Iran for their bravery in hitting the occupying Israel. They did this while many Muslims, like Saudi rulers, are indifferent to the cause and values of Muslim world. Praise Ansarullah of Yemen and Hezbollah and any nation who stands for the Islamic and human rights of Muslim people.
We are happy that Iran carried out the retaliatory strikes on Israel. Every Muslim should feel proud because the bully occupying Zionist regime came under fire. Look, Israeli forces have been oppressing our brothers and sisters in Palestine for decades. It's the time for all Muslim countries to unite and show the aggressors that we can and we have such capabilities.
The Taliban-run foreign ministry issued a statement on Sunday declaring Iran's recent attack on Israel as a legitimate defensive action. It added that Israeli genocide must be stopped in Gaza. Experts say the Afghan ruling authorities' support for Iran's reprisal actions and the Palestinian cause shows Muslims are now united against Israel, and hatred towards the Tel Aviv regime is now everywhere across the Muslim world.
Decades of Israeli occupation in Palestine and its atrocities have made all Muslims hate this regime and call for the regime to be crushed. Over the past few years, the attacks carried out by Hamas and Hezbollah shattered the Israeli regime's grandeur. Iran's strikes against Israel came amid Israel's devastating and deadly bombing campaign against Gaza.
The Afghan people also showed their anger with Israel for its war crimes in Gaza. They call for an immediate ceasefire in war-torn Gaza and demand that the international community help end the war and support Palestine in the face of Israeli invasion.
Afghanistan stands firm beside brotherly Iranian nation. Palestinian cause is bringing the two neighbors even closer. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Described as an act of self-defense, the Yemenis regard the extensive missile and drone strikes carried out by Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps on the Israeli-occupied territories as a response to the Israeli regime's assault on Iran's consular building in the Syrian capital, Damascus.
We consider the Iranian strikes against the Israeli entity a legitimate attack and a response to the Israeli attacks that violated Iran's sovereignty by hitting its consulate in Syria. The Iranian attack is a legitimate move to punish Israel and is part of measures to stop the regime's ongoing crimes since October 7.
The public sentiment aligns with the official stance, as locals overwhelmingly endorse the Iranian strikes, stating that the Israeli regime and its allies only understand the language of force.
The Iranian attack is supported not only by Yemenis but also by all free people in the world. The Iranian response sent the message that Iran's capability is real and that all it was seeking was to liberate Palestine and stop the crimes by the Zionist enemy. Today we are facing an exceptional operation because Iran had not carried out an operation of this scale since the end of the Iran-Iraq war. Iran has been characterized by patience and deliberation due to the way it deals with hostile states. This is the first time that Iran has carried out a military operation against its enemies from within Iranian territory. This attack was successful, came at the right time to put the Zionist enemy in its place, and proved that Iran is capable of blowing up Israel.
Over the past few years, Yemeni-Iranian relations have strengthened, especially during the U.S.-backed war on Yemen, initiated by the 2014 revolution. This military campaign aimed to restore a U.S.-aligned former government in Yemen.
People here believe that the recent Iranian attack against the occupied territories significantly impacts Western powers, demonstrating unity among the resistance forces in the region. They view the attack as the beginning of the end for the Israeli regime and its supporters. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله
Answering a doubts and questions and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs
Allah هو إذا الرحمن Allah هو إذا المنان لا إله إلا
Please send us your emails to our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Well, welcome to another episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I am Atta, the host of this program, and the special guest speaker for today's discussion is Sheikh Rouhani. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh. Welcome to the show.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
For today's discussion, we want to talk about charity and the charitable works, especially for the deceased person. According to a tradition and the custom in Islam, the people, when they miss somebody dear to them, they usually spend in the way of Allah, for the sake of Allah, in the form of charity or in the form of nuzurat, you know, and sadaqah or something like that, in order to help the soul or the spirit of the deceased one. First, let's a little bit be concerned about the authenticity of this action. Can our, for example, charity in this world benefit the soul of a deceased person, Shaykh, or not?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Of course, what we learn from the ayat and the riwayat of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salatu wassalam, it is recommended highly that we should not forget our deceased people, our amwat, and we have to always ask forgiveness from Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for them. And also we have to provide them with khayrat, with charities, with let's say giving something to the poor, to the needy, on behalf of them, and deliver, or let's say give their thawab to them, to their ruh, to their spirits and souls. So that's why, since it is really recommended in ayat and also in riwayat that we should not forget about the amwat and the deceased people after their death.
Yes.
That is why we should be always careful about them. We should always concern them and consider them in our du'as, in our, let's say, acts and deeds, to do good things for them, to, let's say, give their, to donate the thawab of our acts to them, to ask forgiveness from Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for them. These are the things that we have in our Islamic teachings and doctrines.
That's all right. So, is the, you know, we have the concept of Nazr too. We can say in the An-Nazr, or for example, Naz or something like that, which is a person, we can say, do it obligatory upon himself to do some good actions for the sake of God, or for example, I don't know, for the soul of the dear ones or the deceased ones. Are these the same? I mean, Nadr and Sadaqah, are they the same or not?
You know, Nadr is something a bit different from Sadaqah, because in Nadr, you promise yourself or Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that you will perform something, that you will do something, you know?
Yes.